welcome to VBAC Birth Stories, a podcast where Australians share their journey to a vaginal birth after cesarean.
We are a safe haven for women to share their own VBAC journeys and through these personal experiences, educate and empower listeners.
I'm your host, Mel.
And I'm your host, Steph. And this is VBAC Birth Stories.
Hi everyone, in this week's episode we speak with Caitlin. Caitlin has uterus didelphus, which is unique as her uterus has two separate regions where the fetus can grow, meaning two uteri or two wombs with two cervices. Her first baby Ryan grew on one side and her second baby Adeline grew on the other. During her first pregnancy, her private obstetrician advised her to keep her hopes for a natural birth low. Despite this, Caitlin laboured to 8 centimetres following an induction before being led to an emergency cesarean. In her second pregnancy, Caitlin prematurely went into labour at 33 weeks, experiencing a swift, drug-free, natural birth that even took her by surprise. Listen to this episode to hear Caitlin's raw and honest storytelling of her two different births. She tells us about her learnings from her experiences in the neonatal intensive care unit in the public hospital, next door to the private one she was booked into. A quick warning for our listeners that there is some mild swearing in this episode.
Thank you. Thanks, Caitlin, for joining us to share your story today on VBAC Birth Stories.
Thanks for having me.
Could you just start by maybe telling us a little bit about yourself and your first pregnancy?
My husband and I live in Western Sydney. We'd been married for 2.5 years when we fell pregnant. When I did first get married, I had a bit of a episode where I had lots of abdomen pain, and upon ultrasound, they found that I was missing a kidney. So whilst they did scans on me to find my kidney, thinking that it might be in the pelvic regions, because sometimes your kidney kind of gets lost within your body, they discovered that, no, I only had one kidney. And in fact, I had a bicornuate-shaped uterus. So a bicornuate-shaped uterus is just a love heart-shaped. Rather than the top of your uterus being flat, mine was in a curvature. So I thought that was a bit weird, but I didn't really think anything of it. Then I fell pregnant. Well, then when I fell pregnant, I realized that it was a bit more than just a bicornuate uterus. I think the appropriate term is didelphic uterus, where the uterus itself is split in two. So it's just one uterus, but it's halved down the middle. So two wombs, two of everything. So I even have all the way down to two cervices. Could potentially have two vaginas, but I've got that checked in my body.
That would make you like a superwoman, right? Would you be?
But some people do, yeah. That would be epic. That would be epic. But some people do. Not me though. But I have the same amount of fallopian tubes and ovaries. So just the one uterus split in two to make two utero, two cervices and all that, which was pretty intense to find out. So I had two doctor gynecology opinions tell me that more than likely I will give birth prematurely, purely because the baby will only have half a side of a uterus to grow in, and the pressure of it having basically no room to grow in would create pressure on my already weakened cervix because it's halved, and I would have a baby early. My cervix would become incompetent and not be able to cope and just open. So for my first pregnancy, this did not happen. I waited. The overriding opinion was I would be lucky to make it to 30 weeks. So I would have continual cervix checks throughout my pregnancy regularly, and I was fine. So I was, for Ryan, my firstborn, it remained closed and long the entire time, and I made it all the way to 39 weeks. Did not mean that he didn't have a lot of room. He had absolutely no room at all. He was stuck to the right side of me. You know how everyone has these beautiful curved bellies? He was on the right, and I looked so lopsided. Hurt my hip really bad. But no, he stayed all the way. He was a 7-pound baby all the way to 39 weeks. And my doctor was all but amazed. She'd say to me every week from 30 weeks onwards that she'd see me in hospital the next week. She's like, you're not going to make your next appointment. And by probably 36 weeks, I said, well, you keep on saying that and I'm still here. So I've been waiting for this baby for 6 weeks now and you have not.
Yeah. What kind of effect does that have on your mental state? You know, just feeling like, okay, the baby's going to come.
I was walking on eggshells for 6 weeks. I was preparing for birth for like 6 weeks. That ended up being 9 weeks until, because he was head down. He was engaged from 30 weeks. He was engaged quite early. And by 39 weeks, I honestly think that if I sat down on a chair, his head would be on the chair. Like, he was that far down. It was quite uncomfortable. So I asked to be induced at 39 weeks. And I don't know how I feel about the induction. I don't know if that's what caused my cesarean. The fact that, you know, the unnatural contractions, maybe that caused it, but I was unable to progress past 8 centimetres. And as of about 6 centimetres, my body started going into shock. So lots of shaking. And by 2 hours of shaking rapidly, I wanted to have it over and done with.
Had you had an epidural by this stage or any kind of pain relief?
Okay.
Yes. So at what stage did you have the epidural?
From the get-go, from the induction, which makes me also think it could have also been the amount of drugs in me, like the amount of epidural. Potentially. So either it could be, because I was contracting pretty hard, like no breaks, like because I had the monitor on me. There was no breaks within my contractions at all. So, no thanks. I was like, epidural. I did not feel what a contraction felt like at all. That's how early I had my epidural. I was like, I don't want to feel it.
So it was part of your plan before?
Yeah.
From the get-go,
which was vastly different to my second birth.
Yeah.
I thought after giving birth, was it the fact that I chickened out and had the epidural? So not that it's a chicken out.
It's not chickening out.
I did not feel any pain at all. So I just walked in and I'm like, I'll have my epidural now. I was very afraid of that pain. And when I was seeing their contractions, like the monitor, where there was no break, I was like, glad I had this epidural, because my second birth wasn't like that. I always got a break. Not a long break, but I always was able to break and have a bit of a rest time. Whereas I don't think that would have been the case with my first birth.
Do you think that was because of the induction, that they were so close together?
Yeah.
Did you have your midwife or your obstetrician with you at this stage of the first birth?
Yeah. So she was there for the epidural and to start me, and then she was gone for a long time and then came back to check on me every now and then. But even she said, well, your contractions are quite strong, close together. And I'm like, yeah, I can see that can't feel it, thank goodness. I think there were a few factors. I did ask her if it was the epidural. Okay, was it because I had the epidural so early? And she said no. She goes, it was because your body couldn't cope with the amount of contractions you were having, which is what made me think it was the induction, because it was unnatural. I don't know the process of an induction, how long that stays in until the natural contractions take over. I can't comment on that.
But it varies. I think the induction can be at a higher pace than your natural contractions. Because, so it can vary a lot.
Yeah. Because from my understanding, from what my doctor kind of sat me down after, she goes, there's a chance that one of your cervixes, because it's split in the middle, the one that Ryan was in, so my right one, does not contract on its own, whereas my left one would contract too easily.
And that would lead to preterm labour.
That would lead to preterm labour. She goes, so we know now that your right one is strong and sturdy, but it could be because of the split that it's so strong and sturdy that it just won't open.
Right.
Okay. Unless you induce it to open.
Do you think that spontaneous labour may have occurred? Is that something your doctor touched on? No. If you'd waited?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. But I don't think so. Because there has been research to say that in a uterus like mine, there's the way that the uterus contracts, it's like waves, isn't it? Is that, I'm not the...
Yeah, yeah, waves, but, I guess. Yeah. Yeah, we're not entirely sure too.
But like
it, the it sort of comes and goes. Like, yes. Yeah, you're talking about
yeah,
how the contractions
come. Yes, yeah. But for the way that the actual uterus contracts, one side can't do it. It's strange. It's really strange.
So at this stage, you're in your first labour. And you've had your epidural early, your contractions are coming back to back, you've reached about 8 centimetres. Is your midwife telling you this? Did they come and have a chat to you? Or
yeah, so I reached about, so I was having a nice sleep all day, drinking water.
That doesn't sound like a terrible labour.
10 hours. And I got to 6 centimetres. But it was probably about 6 hours by that point. I got to 6 centimetres. And all of a sudden I started shaking. And I said, God, this is odd that I'm shaking. I can't stop shaking. And my husband's there. This is the first, like, bit of entertainment he's had all day. He's like, she's shaking. Like, she's shaking. Why is she shaking? So he was all like, where's your air conditioner? I need to put the heat up. It's freezing in here. No wonder why she's shaking. And I said, no, Matt, like, I'm not cold. I'm just shaking. Like, I can't stop. My lips were chattering, my teeth were chattering, and then after a while, the doctor came in, and I was probably 7 centimetres, and she goes, I'm going to give you another hour. I was shaking for about an hour at this point. She goes, and if you haven't, she goes, because when you're shaking, I was all focusing on my shaking. I wasn't relaxing for my cervix to open, for me to open up anymore. So I didn't really get any much further. So I must have been 8 centimetres when I started shaking. So I mustn't have progressed. So I must have been at 8 centimetres when I started shaking. Sorry, correct myself there. I must That's have been right. at 8 centimetres when I started shaking. And I didn't progress at all. Because she came back in, she goes, you haven't changed. Your length hasn't changed. Because I was like, I'm at 8 centimetres, damn it. Get me to 10. She goes, but you're not going to get any further if you keep on shaking and you're not relaxed, because you need to relax. Because if you can stop shaking and relax, then you could progress even more, but you're not doing that. Then Ryan started being a bit distressed. They noticed that Ryan's heart rate started to race.
And
which scared them a lot, I think.
At this stage, in your mind, were you happy to go for a cesarean if you needed to? Or
yes. I had no expectations, and that was what my doctor said. She goes, don't. She goes, with your uterus, we don't know what is going to happen.
Yeah.
So don't expect that it's going to be a vaginal birth. So
yes. Okay.
And the fact that I had gotten to 8 centimetres meant that I thought that I would be sweet for the next 2 centimetres. Don't get me wrong. Like, I thought I was a bit disappointed that, oh, I got all the way to 8 centimetres here. Like, let me just get to the 10 and I'll be fine. Like, but when they started saying that Ryan's heart rate was going up, I was like, nope, I'm good to stop shaking here. Get me. Yeah. I was pretty okay with whatever they needed me to do, because I just wanted to stop shaking like I was in Antarctica, especially when they started saying he was in distress. And so he ended up being in NICU for 2 days because of that, because he came out with a high temperature and a high heart rate. So I needed him out, type of thing. And I was okay with that.
And how did you come to meet him?
That was a bit of a stress. That was probably the most stressful thing. So I don't know whether it felt like forever. It took him and my husband straight to NICU unit. they explained that to me. He was a bit distressed, had a high heart rate, but he also had a high temperature. That could mean a viral thing, so we have to put him on antibiotics. And that was fine, so that's taking. But I felt like recovery took hours and hours. And they obviously didn't have enough staff that walk the – you know, there are specific staff that walk the beds, really busy. So the nurse said to me, look, you're not going to see him. I had him about 7:30. She goes, you're not going to see him tonight. The NIC unit's closed, because this was about 9 o'clock by the time they were done with me or whatever. Or they were just waiting on a warden. I have no idea. But she goes, the NIC unit's closed for the night and you can't see him, which I know now is a complete lie. Another child in NIC unit, which I know now is a complete lie. But I tantrumed like a little girl. I really took on the role of my 5-year-old niece Jordan and tantrumed.
God bless.
I really engaged her and said no. And cried and cried and cried and cried and cried. Cried and cried and cried. Because, you know, I'd just been from 6 a.m. there waiting for him type of thing. And for him to be like basically ripped out of my body and then I wasn't allowed to see him, that wasn't going to fly.
And feel like it's a very emotional experience that you go through with your first birth.
Yeah, your hormones are truly running at that point. Yeah. Matt was with Ryan. He had waited 2 hours with Ryan. He goes, I just sat there with Ryan for ages and no one was telling me where you were. And they said to me, she'll be in her room. You should go wait for her in her room because that's where she'll be soon. But I tantrum so much that they said, okay, you can get 5 minutes, but 5 minutes only because the ward needs to come back for other women. And I said, oh, fine, but 5 minutes is what they gave me. So he missed me meeting. So he was waiting for me in my room while I was meeting right downstairs. It was a bit of a kerfuffle, but he totally missed my first meeting with him and my first hold, which is a bit sad. But we didn't really get that time as a family until the next morning at probably 7 a.m. were we all able to come down. So then I was escorted back to my room. It was definitely a 5-minute meet, that's for sure. And 5 minutes only was what I got.
How did you feel when you only had 5 minutes? What was that 5 minutes like?
Well, the 5 minutes is beautiful, and I made the nurse take photos because my husband wasn't there. It was beautiful, and like I just sat there holding him, but the 5 minutes did go very quickly. But I did need sleep. That's for certain.
Did you get an opportunity to feed him in those 5 minutes?
No. Didn't even get opportunity to do the whole kangaroo hold, the skin to skin. They didn't even want me to do that. It was a very rushed, very, very rushed meeting. And that's something I'll remember. And that's something that really affected me a few months after giving birth to him. Like, it wasn't until I was home and settled that I think, hey, that was a real shit go. Like, that wasn't nice, you know.
Yeah.
And I did end up, when they requested feedback, I did end up saying, like, that wasn't fair. Like, my husband would have been happy to wheel me in a wheelchair had anyone offered that to him. But in my opinion, NICU was closed, you know, from what
you've been told.
As far as I knew, NICU was closed and it was closed for the night, and I was lucky I was getting those 5 minutes. Yeah, 2 days in NICU, bit of an argument with the NICU ladies because they wouldn't release him if I didn't have I think that was more, the whole NICU experience was a bit more frustrating than the Caesar thing, having an emergency Caesar.
Why was that for you?
Because you get told when you're allowed to hold your baby and you're not allowed to hold him too much, and you know,
it's all a very controlled environment. Yeah.
It's a very controlled environment. I understand why. I don't at all question their methods.
Yeah.
But as a new mum, that was very, like, when, you know, you've gone to see all your nieces and nephews and you're just able to walk in and hold them and all this, and that's what I expected. that I didn't, the fact that I got to 39 weeks meant that I pushed the NICU experience out of my, like, I didn't expect to have that, but I got that. It was only for 2 days, but.
How did you feel that shaped your early mothering and your breastfeeding journey? Did that play, have an effect on that?
I think it made me determined to breastfeed and to not, like, it, because I was, they basically forced me to sign a consent to formula feed him. One of the nurses sat me down and she's like, he's perfectly healthy. If you want to get out, you need to give him a formula feed because they're not going to release him until they realize that he's being fed, even though it has been only 2 days. And I go, but I'm like, I go, it's going good now. Like, my, after the 2 days they had got him off the drip, I go, my boob's doing it. Like, I'm feeding him. Like, I've got the latch going and everything.
Yeah.
And they were like, no, we need to see it physically. We need to see the meals coming out. So it taught me for the next time to express every 3 hours on the dot. Because he wasn't, you know, everyone tells you what to do when they're next to you and not on a drip or not tubed. Everyone tells you how to feed. Like, I get that. But when they're not there, when they're not in your hospital room, when they're 2 floors below and you can't get there every 3 hours, you need to – because, no, sorry, they let you feed twice a day. They let you feed from the boob twice a day. But when you're not there, when you're not able to put them on you every 3 hours, you need to make sure you're expressing. Mm-hmm. So they weren't going to release him. He was had his antibiotics. He wasn't viral. He was a fine, perfectly healthy boy. He wasn't promy, none of that. The issue with NICU is they don't trust that you can feed them through your breasts until you prove it to them. I learnt a lot of what to do for next time because I knew there could be a next time and there was a next time. Mm-hmm. And I attribute everything I learned.
Speaking of Adeline, who was your second baby, when you fell pregnant with her, were you thinking about having a VBAC at this point in time?
Okay, yes. So my doctor said this. I asked my doctor at my 6 week checkup. That's how lucky I was. She said basically, if it's in the same uterus, so if I had her in my right once again, she would not let me go natural. It would have to go straight to booked Caesar. If she was in the other uterus, I could attempt it if everything else went well.
How did you feel about that?
Fine.
When she told you that, you felt fine? Okay.
Fine, yeah.
Yeah.
Because I understood. She goes, your uterus is very complicated as it is. Mm-hmm. So I won't let you push on your scar if it's in the right uterus that Ryan was in. But if it's in a new uterus, I will let you, because it wouldn't be as much pressure on your scar. So if I was to have another Caesar, so if Adeline was in my left, and if I was to have another Caesar with Adeline, it'd be same cut on the skin, but a new cut on a different uterus. So it's technically not considered a VBAC, but it is. Like, she goes, it's a VBAC, but not really a VBAC because it's a new scar. It's a new cut that I'd have to do on a completely different uterus.
This is like really like mind-blowing stuff for me.
Is it?
Yeah, it's amazing. So it's like you've got the two sort of uterus, I guess, pockets. One has been in, I don't know, I just made up that term. It's probably not. Just made it up on the spot. But yeah, there is an incision in one, but not in the other. Yeah. So when you found out you were pregnant, was that one of the first things you wanted to get to the bottom of?
So at the 7 week scan, we concluded that she was in the left now, and that's a whole new ball game. So when I went to my obstetrician, she was happy but she was mostly sad. She goes, I'm happy for you because you can potentially get the VBAC you want, the vaginal birth you want, but I'm sad because we don't know what's going to happen now. Because if she was in the right, we'd know, I'd most likely, most probably go to full term.
Mm.
Now that it's a new ball game,
yeah.
Chances are this one's weaker because the other one was so strong. But that's okay. We'll come to it when it comes. So that's right. So we came to it at 25 weeks. We saw that my cervix was hyperdynamic, which means it was crazy. It opened, closed, opened, was long, was short, was opened while long, was closed and short. It just did all these. It could, it wanted to somersault if it could, it would do that. Like, it was just a crazy hyperdynamic cervix that if you did an internal, it changed positions 20 times in 2 minutes.
Oh, wow.
So it wasn't just weak, it was hyperdynamic. So at 25 weeks, I had to go on bed rest because I was too late for a stitch. So I stayed in bed rest for 8 weeks. I stayed in hospital for 5 weeks. Then I was able to go to mum's for 2 weeks and then I had her.
Were you preparing for a VBAC in a way? Like, did you do any preparation that was different this time?
No, I didn't do any preparation that was different. I did book in for a birthing class, which I was not in time for.
Of course, yeah.
She came too early for the birthing class. It was due for that Saturday. So I said this time, I go, just in case it was the epidural that caused me to go into that shock with the shaking, I'm going to hold back on the epidural. And hopefully, you know, going to, you know, labor at home. And then I was totally planning on having an epidural, but just not that early. Yeah. So, well, what I did do, and I did it with Ryan, the only preparation I really did was I listened to a hypnobirthing book. That was very calming. That really calmed me down, like with my fear of it all. That really made me feel like it'll be okay. So I don't think my head was in there for the first, for Ryan, but I re-listened to it because I had so much time. Second time around. Yeah, so I did that. But that was all the preparation I really did, to be completely honest. I was just on 33 weeks when I had her, when I went to spend spontaneous labour.
Oh, wow. And how did that start for you?
I did a poo. Just a bit too challenging. Yep, that definitely happened. So there was a show, a bloody show, and I took photos of it because that day I was going to see my obstetrician at 4 p.m. and it was about 9 a.m. when that bloody show happened with my morning breakfast, obviously. And I didn't think that was right. And then I was off for the whole day. I was feeling very off, very uncomfortable, more than usual. I was at my mother's, you know, I was telling her, like, I don't feel right. And then at about 1 o'clock, I had a nap. In addition to this, the day before, I had an ultrasound and a cervix check. And it didn't look good, but it never looked good but this particular time it was a bit more open than usual. So I knew that it was going to be time where I was going to go back into the hospital, and it happened to be that day. So at 1 o'clock I took my nap, and about 2 o'clock she woke me up and called me, my doctor, and she goes, look, I've just had a look at your ultrasound. I didn't tell her about my episode that morning, but she goes, I had a look at your ultrasound and I see that it's not good and you need to go back into the hospital. We're going to not meet up at 4 o'clock anymore. We're going to not meet up. I'll see you in the hospital. You're going to go straight to the hospital. And it was like when I said, oh, look, I kind of saw this coming. Kind of be good to go tell the nurses about what happened. So, but once I hung up, it was like Adeline said, nope, I'm actually going to come out now.
Oh, wow.
That's when my contractions actually started. As soon as I hung up, I was like, oh, that hurts. Yeah. That really hurts. but I was a bit airy-fairy about it, thinking it was just Braxton Hicks. I think given the weakness of my cervix, I don't think I needed very tough contractions. I went till about 4 o'clock saying it's just Braxton Hicks when I was in full-blown labour. When you think it's just Braxton Hicks. So it was quite – I look back at it and I kind of laugh now. I said to my mum, instead of going home, let's just go straight to the hospital and get them to check just to make sure I'm not in labour, mum. Because on the way, because I'm like, this is really feeling like it's getting a bit stronger and stronger over time. And she goes, what, do I have to come in with you to the hospital? Okay, yeah, well, yeah, like that's what I'm kind of insinuating. She goes, I don't have time for this, Caitlin, she was me. So mum had to, mum was with me in the birth.
Oh, really?
I think mum needed to go to a birthing class because mum was not ready at all to be with us. Mum was more in shock that I was in labour than what I was. My husband was working 3 hours away and made it with 10 minutes to spare.
Oh, no.
So mum was mortified. So mum's commentary during the whole thing was quite, made it quite bearable, to be honest. She made me laugh a lot.
Oh, that's good. What were some of the things she was saying?
One of them was when I said to the lady, because I seriously thought it was Braxton Hicks. So when she was looking me over, I go, look, you're not really giving much away. Am I in labour or not? Because my husband's 3 hours away and I need to call him because I wasn't going to call him. And she goes, oh, no. Oh, no, you're having this baby today. You need to call him. And mum goes, oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness, she's in labour. She's like, I need to call your sisters. I need to call everyone now. Yeah. This gentleman. And then, like, she was really flustered the entire time. And we kind of tell her a lot that she would never be the greatest birthing partner ever. So when she called up Tennille, because she was looking after Tennille's kids, so she had to kind of cancel on her. So when she called up Tennille's kids, Tennille, she was like, oh, no, mum, I'm coming. I'm stopping with you. I'll be her birthing partner. And mum goes, no, I'm her birthing partner. You stay where you are. And then like 5 minutes later, she made this comment because I was, you know, in a contraction. And she goes, Brittain didn't make as much noise as what you're making right now. And then mum, you know, we were talking about you not being a great birthing partner. This is exhibit A.
Oh my God, that's a classic.
And I think when I said that, she kind of realised, kind of stretched up a bit, and then her massages were quite nice. So
Every time she
massaged me instead, instead of talk, I'm like, yeah, you do that. That's your job.
Were you glad having her, obviously, because she wasn't involved in your first birth at all? Was it kind of reassuring having her there and a part of it in a way?
Yeah, it was nice. It was nice, to be honest. She's just funny. Like,
she's very cute.
Would have stressed out a lot, like made me stress a lot. Whereas when mum stresses, I kind of come down a bit because she's not, like, she just stresses about little things. Like when they do an internal, I'm going to see how far dilated I was. Her face would just go as white as anything. And then when they'd leave a room, she'd be like, oh, when I see the cows, because she has cows at home, when I see the vet do that to my cows when they're giving birth, it just makes me cringe. She goes, this is the same. This is even worse, Caitlin. Because I do not like seeing that at all. Happy baby, brothers don't like that happening.
Do you think it helped you relax a lot more in your second birth?
Yeah, she did.
I was going to ask you, Caitlin, about you. You mentioned you didn't have an epidural this time. Why was that, and what was a part of that?
There was a few reasons. First was I was asking for it. Don't get me wrong; I'm all for the drugs. Being on bed rest, I was giving myself Clexane shots. That's blood thinners. Bed rest.
Okay.
And I had stupidly said to them, "Oh, I'm good," because I said, "Oh, my epidural now." And she goes, "Oh, it's a big needle." And I go, "Oh, I'm good with needles. I gave myself Clexane today." And she just says, "Oh, well, then you can have an epidural, love."
Oh, really?
if your blood is thin, you bleed out.
Oh, okay.
And my labour was, so I got there at about 4 o'clock. My labour, I had her 2.5 hours later.
Wow.
So I don't think I'd have time. Mm. And I never properly understood that the epidural, the hard bit, the painful bit is the contractions, whereas the pushing bit is the adrenaline. You don't feel pain during the push. I don't know about anything else. I had a 30-minute push time. It was more of adrenaline and excitement and in lack of better words, pushing out a poo than my worst thing was that I felt like I wasn't strong enough to withhold to push the entire contraction. Like I could feel, because what I actually think happened was we're calling my husband to check up where he was. We weren't actually telling him what part of the birth I was at. So I did tell him I was 4 centimetres. So he kind of kept on thinking I was at 4 centimetres. And 2 hours later, I was no longer at 4 centimetres. I was ready to push. So my doctor said, "Look, just call him up, see where he is. And he was about 10 minutes away. So I think I was ready to push at that point. And they said, "Oh, well, he's 10 minutes away."
And so mentally, did you wait until he arrived, do you think? You were sort of
Well, my body started involuntarily pushing. I just started saying, "I'm pushing. Oh, my God, I'm pushing.
Yeah.
And the nurse said, "Oh, well, we can't wait any longer." Like I was not in on the whole waiting thing. I had no idea we're waiting.
Yeah.
What the hell are we waiting for? No, they just asked me, "Do you want to wait for your husband?" I would have said no. I had to go through how many more contractions because our body waiting there, thanks.
Yeah, I don't think so.
Yeah. And so mum was obviously there, and then Matt.
He thought it was going to be like Brian, another 12-hour birth, you know. So he, you know, went to the hotel because he was working away. He went to the hotel, had a shower. You know, took his time, got to the hospital. He got all the way to the hospital, which we were waiting for. Then he said, "Oh, you know what? I'm going to have some dinner." So he went and got some sushi.
No way. He went and got sushi because he just thought that there's no urgency.
Yeah. He didn't think it was, because Caitlin's with her mum. She'll be right. She's just, you know. And then he walked, because I had specifically told him, "Don't go up any elevators." I go, "When you walk in, just walk around the corner and you'll be in the birthing suite. Don't go up any elevators."
Yes.
What does he do? He goes up to level 4.
Oh, no.
And then mum got on the phone. He goes, "I'm on level 4. Is this the right level?" And she lost. And that's when he realised it was an emergency. "She's pushing it out. You need a hurry."
Oh my God.
She heard him in the birthing suite. She heard him that he was around. So she runs over and says, it wasn't until that point when he was on level 4, when he was on level 1, that he realized that he was in the wrong area. But he was not meant to be rushing. And then he walked in and goes, "Oh no." He goes, "I didn't realize you're pushing." Which is my fault because I didn't tell him, but like, come on, when you're asking labor, jeez. Be there. But anyway.
Brilliant.
Anyway. So he was, I think, to be honest, I don't even think Adeline's real to him yet, because it took him a long time to realize, "Oh my God, I've had another baby."
Wow.
In 10 minutes he had gotten a baby. He missed out all the hard work, but she just loves him. So,
and what was his reaction when he came into the room?
Yes,
and what did he say to you?
"Why didn't you tell me?" And I was halfway through pushing, and I'm like, "Because."
Because I didn't know you up to this point.
And then he just jumped on, started holding legs and stuff. He was being really cute. It was cute. Great. And then as long as he got to cut the umbilical cord, he was happy.
Yeah, wow.
He was happy. So he didn't entirely miss it. And then Mum got on to video the whole thing. Wow. I changed Mum's job. And then I could do births like that 10 times over without the drugs. Like, that was fine. Mm-hmm. Like I did, like, it's kind of like this really beautiful thing. Like, I did it, you know? Like, I managed to push that thing out. Yeah, she was only 2 kilos, but to me, like, it was, she wasn't like a 5 kilo baby, but it was a pretty proud moment of mine, like, that I was able, because there was no, there was no bone in my body not having drugs, there was no bone in my body thinking that I was going to feel it.
Mm.
I was always determined to not feel that happening.
Mm.
And I had a very good cry when they said, no, it's not going to happen.
When they said no epidural.
Yeah, but I had to push through it and I had the no epidural. So, and I did, and I lived, you know, it's not and like it.
It sounds like it was, yeah, it sounded like compared to your previous epidural experience, you weren't shaking in Adeline's birth.
That's right. So next time around, I'll aim, depending on where what uterus it's in, to try that again. But who knows? But I'd take Caesar over Premier Baby any day, to be honest. So if I could, if I could make it to full term and not have a Premier Baby and still have a Caesar, I'll do it. You know, like,
and
if that meant
weeks?
Having Caesar, then I'll do it. So we left at 35 weeks and it's pretty rule of thumb that they don't leave until 36 weeks, but she really smashed the NICU unit. During my pregnancy, I had shots of steroids, so she wasn't on any breathing. She didn't need any help breathing. Mm. And I really fed the shit out of her. I shouldn't say it. I made sure that I pushed and I pushed, because if it was up to them, I'd be at 36 weeks and still only putting her to my breast 2 times a day. Whereas I said, no, I want to try more and more and more. Mm-hmm. And I'd go to the nurses every single day and I say, look at my 200 mils. Like, I was expressing, I left with eskies of milk because I made sure that I was on it every 3 hours. So I was pretty stoked with that. So they'd be feeding her in a tube. Then I was also really stoked that she didn't get an ounce of formula in NIC unit. I would never let them, like, not with the amount of milk I was bringing in. Like, I made sure, and, you know, and I'll...
Yeah, if that's your intention, yeah, to breastfeed. Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
So she met all the criteria. She, you know, breathing was good, weight was good. She just needed to learn how to suck, swallow and breathe, and she really took off so well with it. So I was really proud of her.
That's amazing. And so you took her home at 35 weeks. And how did you find that experience at home?
I was so ready to be home. You know, I had spent a whole 10 weeks away from Ryan, you know, being on bed, all up, being on bed rest, being in NICU. I was ready to be a mum again, to be honest. And I was a bit worried with the whole, because I had gone from having no children to now 2 children and one of them was a toddler. Yes. So I was very worried that I'd be very overwhelmed with having Ryan back in my care, because he, you know, he literally wasn't allowed in my care. Mum and my mother-in-law really took over and really helped out with him, and basically had a roster of who would have him when. They were really good. And then when I came home, I brought them both home. Like, I didn't have a day where I just had just Adeline. I wanted them both with me, just to have a night as a family for once, you know. And yeah, it was so good. It was really, really good.
And you were saying, when you came home,
How was the recovery? Oh, we forgot to ask you, did you have any tearing?
I had, she cut me. I was cut.
Episiotomy?
Yeah, that's what it's called. Yeah, I had an episiotomy, but a very minor one.
Yep.
I think it just got my perineum. From what my doctor said, it just got my, I don't know what a perineum is, but it just slightly got that, I'm pretty sure. I had to get about 2 or 3 stitches, I'm pretty sure. Well, you have to just understand with both of them. So to get to NICU unit is a long walk, and I wasn't waiting for someone to cart me over. I got, especially with the natural birth, I got right up and I walked it. So I was discharged 3 days later, and I couldn't have just jumped in the car and come to her whenever I wanted, you know, with the Caesar. My husband, we have our own business, so he wasn't taking time off while she was in hospital. He takes time off when she comes home, because that's the more, like, that's the time I need him more, you know. So we decided that pre-birth. But if I had had a Caesar and I needed to travel to the hospital every day, I couldn't have with the cesarean. So I was very lucky that that's what happened.
Yes.
That's how it went down. Just the logistics of it was just better to have a natural birth, to be honest. I think, and I've stated it a few times, you know, cesarean was no pain, but the recovery was painful, whereas natural was painful. And the recovery was minimal.
Yeah.
And you know, I think they're both much and muchness. If I go again, would I want a natural? Yes. But it's bearable, and you recover and you have healthy babies. And that's, you know, it wasn't about the Caesar. It was about getting my kid out of NIC unit and having him home for me. And again, on my 6-week checkup, I spoke to the doctor about it, because that's what I do, I'm very organized. And she basically said, given that you had a natural in your left uterus, that if you were to go again and get pregnant in Ryan's uterus, the right one, last time she had completely ruled out natural, but this time, however, she is okay for me to go natural again.
Interesting.
If it's in the right or the left. But if it's in the right, I can only go natural if it's spontaneous labour and if it's preterm.
Okay.
So if she has to induce me at full term, I'd have to go Caesar. So my ultimate goal would be to have it natural, of course, as a majority of women's are, to have it natural, but I can't be banking on it because the chances of it is quite slim.
So for you, it sounded like your VBAC was by far, you know, the better experience of the two.
Yes.
I wanted to quickly take you back to Ryan's birth just for a minute, where you were saying that the NICU experience, when he was taken away from you, and although it was only for 2 days, you said that it did affect you later on.
Yes,
It definitely affected me more than
More than what the Caesar did, to be completely honest. It's, and the NICU is a whole new world. Like, it's, I don't know, it's confronting, it's full on, and the nurses, for lack of I completely respect the work and all that they do and stuff, but some of them can be bloody brutal. Like, they can be brutally honest, and sometimes when you've just had a baby ripped out of you, brutal honesty is not, like, you kind of need a bit of empathy. And some of them, not all of them, some of them don't give you that, and very set in ways, which is understandable, wasn't what I was expecting. And just the whole process of the whole NICU is closed for the night really got me. After a while, especially when I realised that, hey, NICU is not closed for the night. That is a bit of bullcrap. Like, that really, you know, after a while affected me. Like, that I was a bit played, and that's not the time in one's life that you should be playing them type of thing, you know. But I kind of, when you talk to other women about it, And I did join a mother's group, which I found to be really good. And a lot of my friends had children at the same time. And through that, I was able to kind of, that was about 6 months after I had Ryan. I kind of was able to think, hang on, it wasn't that bad. It's okay. Like, what I got in the end of it was a healthy baby boy. I'm okay. He's okay. We've gotten over it. He's now a 6-month-old kid. We're like, it's fine type of thing. That experience won't happen again. It'll be different next time. You know, hopefully I'll have a healthy baby that didn't have to go into NICU unit. That was kind of my mentality of it. He's 2-year-old and now, and I don't really have time to think about it and to mull over it, whereas the first few months I did.
Yes.
But you just recover from it. Upon talking to friends and talking to the network around you, you just recover from it. Because one of the first things that happened in my mother's group was tell everyone about your birth. Like, go around, yes, say your name, tell everyone about your birth, yeah, you know. They all kind of empathize. That's where you get the empathy, where other mothers are like, oh, yeah, you know what, that's crap. That's really bad, but it's okay, you know. Don't think about it too much because it's okay. He's healthy and you're good. And then when you see all the other mums that have micro primaries and they're in hospital for 3 or 4 months, you think, you know what? I actually have it good. And that 33 weeks isn't bad, you know. It's just a milestone that we have to get over. And we got over it, you know, and I made sure that she got over it type of thing. So, yeah, that's my mentality of it.
These were two very different sort of hospital experiences. And what would you say that this sort of leads into what we were just speaking about, what you would say that the hospital could have done differently to facilitate a better birth for you?
I think Adeline's birth was, other than the fact that she was 2 months premature, but Adeline's birth was quite different, quite a lot nicer. But I don't know if I should attribute that also to the fact that she was my second. So I was a bit more, I kind of have a bit more understanding of what to expect type of thing.
Confidence.
I haven't really decided on that one. But, you know, I still, when I was in recovery and I was done. I still remember the conversation the two nurses were having while I was there, like butt naked on. Like they were talking about high schools around Western Sydney and what high school they went to, and that infuriated me. And I didn't burst because of the person I am. Like, I didn't yell at them or anything because I'm not like that. I have literally just birthed a child that I can't see, you know.
Like, and it was almost like you're there in front of them and yet they couldn't see you because they weren't engaged with
that's
you.
Exactly. That I was watching them. Sorry, looking back on it, no, neither of them were going to take me to my child because that wasn't either of their jobs. But I didn't know that at the time. So they were waiting on a warden and had nothing to do with them, that the warden was late, but it really infuriated me. So, but anyway. It is what it is.
We just wanted to thank you so much for coming on our show and, you know, trusting us to share your birth story, which is obviously so unique. Works. And
it is a bit of a fun one.
It's so interesting.
Thank you for listening to this VBAC story. If you like the show, please subscribe and feel free to leave a review. If you would like to connect with us on social media, you can find us on Instagram and Facebook. Just search for VBAC Birth Stories. If you have a question or you'd like to express interest in sharing your personal story, email us at vbacbirthstories@gmail.com. VBAC Birth Stories is a podcast where we share women's lived experiences. Please be advised that it's not intended to replace medical advice. If you have any concerns at all during your pregnancy, please always speak to your healthcare provider.